Okay, well, we got a couple of questions in the chat. I don't know if you want to roll back through that. You should still be able to see it.
Sure. Let me see. Thanks, Kurt. Let's see. Well, there was some questions about, or some comments about loyalty programs, which I think we did talk about. So I don't know if there's much more to say on that.
I was thinking as Meredith was talking, now that you go back and watch it, and it's horrible to watch yourself talk, but at the same time, you do hear things that you didn't hear the first time. And when Meredith was talking about the Starbucks reward program, I remember thinking just now, there's a lot of information in what I'm ordering for my coffee company at a given time. Like, there's the idea of when I am more tired, so what my actually daily habits are, when I might be more stressed or having more anxiety, depending on if I'm ordering, you know, more sweet drinks or just going in and getting something really fast. And I think there's a habit of deducing things that we don't think are personal to, like, that's not a big deal. I can give that information away without thinking all of the secondary or tertiary information that can be derived from it. And so just a encouragement as you're in loyalty programs, not to see it as just like your receipt from the grocery store or the drugstore, et cetera. But that can reveal a lot of sensitive information that you're not seeing on the receipt. But I think Meredith's point was still valid, is that it still pales in comparison to Google search history. So it's not on the same level, but there is more to it than I think meets the eye.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think there is sort of this, like, there's that big example, right, about Target and, you know, how Target kind of looking at, I can't exactly remember what information they looked at, right, but kind of by looking at the way that this girl was shopping, you know, kind of deduced that she was pregnant, sent a mailer to her house, her father saw it, was outraged that they sent her this mailer, and then came back later and was like, actually, turns out you knew more about what was going on in my house than I did, which is disturbing in all kinds of levels.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, we got this question here. How is data protection being collaborated internationally, and what are we doing right or bad versus that of other countries?
I just see Amy's like head in her hand.
So the U.S., little known international fact, even among people who work on privacy and data protection, the U.S. used to be the leader. Like, the Fair Information Practices, the core document came from the United States. And so we used to be way out in front. Now that was 40 plus years ago. And now we are so far behind. It's really sad. And so Europe is really the country leading on data protection. And a lot of different countries are starting to adopt the model that they used in the General Data Protection Regulation, which is great. Although I think we've even just in the very short time that law has been enacted, have seen ways that it can be improved upon. Companies are maybe interpreting its provisions to let them continue doing what they did before. And advocates in Europe are very angry about that, and they say this is not what this means. But now that we know that's how it's being interpreted, we can improve upon it. And so the conversations in the US, I think we'll eventually get a privacy law. And we have a chance, we have a real chance to have it be better than Europe and have it set a new standard internationally. And have people try to improve their own laws to meet that. But it's going to take a lot of work, and I don't think we're near as far along as we would like to be. The only other thing worth mentioning with, and Haley can talk about this so much better than I can, but with the CCPA and with different countries, first of all, with different countries having their own privacy law, and then with California's privacy law and the threat, even like the vague threat of states passing different privacy laws, you'll hear a lot about the patchwork. And just to note, like, there have been a patchwork of privacy laws, of data breach laws, of employment laws Companies have always had to comply with a lot of different things. What we want is laws that are not inconsistent with one another, but that build upon each other. So I think it's okay to have a patchwork where some are stronger and some are weaker, as long as like you're not creating a system where like you cannot possibly comply with this law and this law at the same time. Like this law says you cannot give information away for anybody over 15. And this law says this, you have to give information away for anybody between 13 and 18. And like there's a internal inconsistency there we should watch out.
Yeah, I agree with everything Amy said. I think, you know, if you always, just generally, if you look at, just in a couple ways that they're different, I think if you look at Europe, they tend to be a lot more, I talked in the panel a bit about being opt-in versus opt-out. I think in Europe, they do look at that opt-in model a little bit more. They're also a little bit clearer about saying, you know, you you use data for certain purposes, and those are the purposes that you can use it for. But yeah, as Amy said, you know, this stuff is hard. Legislating it is hard. It's hard to wrap your head around. It's, you know, we had this whole panel about one idea, right? So I think as we see how Europe is proceeding, and maybe hopefully we can learn lessons from that and build that into our own laws. And yeah, I think also as Amy alluded to, so we in California, we have the California Consumer Privacy Act, that's the CCPA that we referred to. You know, that is it is a good starting point for where I think we would, EFF would like to see privacy law move forward. It's not perfect. There are a lot of things that I would change about it and have tried to change about it and maybe would have been more successful in changing about it if the legislature did not have to deal with COVID-19 this year, which is a priority, I understand. I should be clear. Yeah, and I think other states are also looking at California and coming up with their own ideas, and we've had so many conversations with legislators just about, okay, how do we make these laws work together? What could we do better? And the federal government is paying attention to that conversation, and so I think we are on a path. I don't know how long we will be on this path, but I do think we are we're on good footing to get something.
Well, it's a good point about state legislation. If we come up with some scheme for getting paid for your data, it seems like it would knock out a lot of this privacy protection across the board or modify it in some way, shape, or form. So I think that's another strike against it. So I wonder what you think about that. It seems like it would be hard. They're kind of different. They're different goals heading in different directions. And I don't see how they could possibly be compatible.
Yeah, I think, let's see. Sorry, I'm trying to tease that out of my head a little bit. Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. And I think, you know, Amy brings up the good point about you just want to make sure that there isn't like destructive interference, right? That laws in different states aren't conflicting with each other. And yeah, I think adopting this sort of model of monetizing data is very destructive to a lot of other things that we want to do. That's a good point.
There's we are at a weird time in the US because like I don't want to call them lazy, but members of Congress who want to do something on this issue, I think sometimes they're like, why don't we just copy the GDPR? And some of them have been like, why don't we just copy the CCPA? Each of those have significant problems for totally unique reasons. But if we get a really, really weak state law, and it will have the same consequence, we're going to have members of Congress saying, why don't we just copy, I'm not going to name a state, I have a couple in mind, but like, why don't we just copy this like super weak law? And all of a sudden you have members of Congress from that state that have bought into that and that think it's a great idea and it'll have champions. And so there is a risk greater than any single state in passing a weak law, that it then gets into the federal conversation and colors it in some dangerous ways. And we should be watching for that, especially with pay for privacy and the chances that people could become used to a system that doesn't reward them in the ways they think it might. On the other side, it could get passed and people could see like, this is not what we thought it was going to be. So maybe that could be a good thing as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think that it's a very good point about state laws. I think, you know, again, what we at EFF are, one of the things that keeps me up at night is the idea that, you know, some state will pass a law that sounds good, but does not actually do that much. And then the federal government will take it and say, and this overrides all the other laws in all the other states. So, you know, if, you know, we would just want to see a federal law that doesn't take away any of the rights that, that states have given their citizens. And yeah, so that's another concern.
Well, I wonder if the industry would, you know, if they would come up with some scheme for just paying you a pittance, a real small amount, to basically knock out all this privacy legislation and kind of take us back to the days of the Wild West, which we haven't really gone that far from it. We're still pretty much in those days.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I mean, certainly we have seen, not naming names or states, we've seen companies get involved in proposals in various states that, you know, I think we do think, you know, just kind of want to throw you a bone, which is essentially what pay for privacy or data dividend, both those models feel like. So I do think that's a strategy. I think often those solutions are sold as like a compromise solution, right? Nobody's happy, so it must be the right solution. And again, I find that approach very troubling.
So we got a question about-
take this question down here. Yeah, the DNA question.
Go ahead. Yeah, I was gonna jump on the DNA test question.
I have gotten this question like 8 times over the last 2 weeks. I don't know what has happened in the world. Like, I feel like there's a news story I missed that everybody is now talking about DNA tests again. They get real, like, there are periods when they're really hot and then you don't hear about them for a while. But I've gotten a lot on this in the last 2 weeks. My family where members of my family are really into ancestry and like figuring out where they've come from and where my different family members are. So a lot of them have taken these DNA tests. I will say I have not. I don't ever plan on it, at least not under the current laws. And I tend to advise against them, but they have really great benefit, especially for people who have institutional reasons for not knowing their ancestry. Think about back in the United States under the slave days, you have a lot of people who came from those communities who were slaves who don't know where they came from because none of those records were kept. And there are benefits in being able to figure out where your family is from. There's like a sense of self that you can derive from that. So there are huge benefits. And so I hate telling people don't do this because I know there are internal benefits, but we need so many stronger laws to block out what companies can do with that information. We've yet to scratch the surface on how it can be manipulated and used against you potentially. And now that people are taking this information, are taking these tests, it's like the cat is out of the box. Pandora's box has been open. And so trying to get some laws about protecting that information from being manipulated or misused when law enforcement can get access to that information. Some of these companies just like are willing to give access to their databases or turn it over full stop. And it's not only you that's implicated, but it's everybody in your family. So DNA isn't personal. This is another problem with pay for privacy. It's not just your data, it's your whole family's data. So are you gonna pay everybody in that person's genealogical tree if they do a DNA test? So I just think that this is an area where the law hasn't kept up and to people's detriment, because there's a lot of benefits to be derived from this information. Florida has passed what I think is the first very specific genetic privacy law in the country, specifically on this topic, and it's about police access. And I think it's probably because Florida is the home of where a lot of these law enforcement cases were happening, where companies were turning information over to the police. And Florida also has a heavy libertarian bent in some circles. So those two things come together. And I think you got this genetic privacy law, but it's not enough because it doesn't hit the company side.
Okay, well, I will say something more about the DNA tests, that they're looking at different parts of the genome, and I'll talk a little bit about my situation. I actually took two different tests from two different companies because I have a chronic condition, and I was participating in a research project where they were actually using the data. So the good thing about it is that you can get massive sequencing done for much less money than you used to be able to do, and you can enter research, you actually turn it over to a university and enter, turn the data over and enter, a research project. And I made sure that it was uploaded in a secure way. But one of the things you notice is that they're looking at different parts of the genome, which is going to give them different information. And I had one of the services telling me that I was 100% European, and another service tell me that I was a third Native American Indian. And I know because we have a family tree that goes back 8 generations, because we had somebody who used to track that. And I'm actually 1/8 Cherokee. So neither service got it quite right, but they're looking at different parts of the genome, so they're going to see you differently. I don't know of anybody that's sequencing the entire genome at this point. So you're going to get to situations where it's the same person and they look at you very differently and they might interpret it very differently. So that's another thing to think about. There's that information about the Golden State Killer and his family members taking the test, and how that's been used by law enforcement. If you want to talk about that briefly,
there's always good stuff that comes from invasions of privacy, or can be good stuff. There's also tremendous abuse, and we hear about benefits to society, and we don't hear about the abuse until it's too late. And so, yes, this is absolutely true, but what are the costs for turning this information over to law enforcement? And it's going to live in their databases because law enforcement doesn't like to get rid of information. And how can it be used? So yes.
Yes, and probably for a long time to come. Are there any more questions? This is a great time to ask. Go ahead and put them in the chat. Otherwise, we may need to wrap up and get to some final comments. We got one more typing.
And come on, Tom. Go, Tom.
Go, Tom. Thank you very much for thank you very much for coming back out for round two on this.
Oh yeah, my pleasure. I mean, I so wish we were in Atlanta right now, but in some alternate universe. But this is very nice, and we appreciate so much the work that DragonCon and EF Georgia have done to get all this together.
The biggest of plus ones to that. There's so much good media, I feel like, this past year. There would have been so many amazing costumes.
Oh,
just from how many great TV shows and movies and things people could have. I want to see that 11 outfit from Stranger Things. I know people made that.
Well, we did our parade by shooting one person at a time and then stringing them all together.
Oh, that's great. Oh, that's a very interesting question, Tom. I don't know that I know enough about medical privacy to answer that, or property law.
So we like to think HIPAA is a medical privacy law. It has some privacy components to it, but it's really not. I'm going to take it out of the medical context for a minute, though, because I think that medical privacy is its own space, and that complicates things. But we are seeing, and have for like 10 years, seeing companies' data, like personal data that they've collected, be seen as a commodity when they go bankrupt, and then be sold as a commodity to people who they would have never anticipated. And that is another potentially harmful practice, because it really goes against anything in their privacy policy that this is allowed to happen, and people have no control over it at that point, because the entity sometimes has ceased to exist as an entity. So that's it. There's a lot of threats with where these records go, and people are even less in control when it happens that companies go bankrupt or go out of business.
We've got a few more typing.
Well, I don't know how to answer the insurance company question without a little more
context. State the question first. Maybe state the question first.
Yeah. But while we're doing that, I can speak to the second one about newer technology, deep learning, which is, you know, it's not maybe a very satisfactory answer, but I think people are starting to look at this particularly, sort of in the realm of kind of algorithmic transparency, and you know, sort of in that vein, it is, you know, legislation moves much slower than technology. I think, you know, a lot of what we're trying to do in privacy space right now is set down principles that are technology agnostic. So a lot of what we talked about, right, don't collect more data than you need, don't use it for purposes other than you collect it, don't share it or sell it with people or with other entities without asking people if you have their permission to do so. Deep learning is tricky, right? I mean, I think we don't know really enough about what it does and how it will be applied to know how to legislate, to even to evaluate all the harms and then to legislate to protect them. So I think there's a lot of thinking. I think there's a lot of thought from academics and politicians and, you know, all sorts of people trying to start those conversations now so that we can arrive at a satisfactory solution more quickly. But yeah, it takes a lot of data to be useful. You don't want to undermine sort of the progress on the research, but you also want to be sure that you're protecting people. And that's gonna take a lot of time.
Deep learning is also is a further complication to pay for privacy, because if a company pays me $5 or whatever arbitrary amount of money for like 5 pieces of information about me, and then they put that into a deep learning system and are able to determine 50 other pieces of information about me, do they pay me for that information or for only the facial information that I turn over? So I think there are going to be that is going to complicate this area even more, and it's going to implicate big companies. Big companies are going to have the authority and the power and the ability to do that more than small companies, which means they will have to pay less potentially in a system like this. And there was another question, why did my insurance company want to pay me $100 for a nurse to come and ask me questions? I don't know the answer to that other than, these are very specific individual circumstances, but companies want information about you. So this is a question very specific to me. I identify as woman. I was born identifying as a woman. And when I go to the doctor every single time, they ask me, when was the first day of my last period? I apologize if that grosses anybody out. I know there's stigma, whatever. I'm getting over the stigma. It wasn't until I was in my late 20s that I found out that is not a question that is necessary for a medical reason. That is a question that the insurance company wants the doctors to ask so they have that information, which is what I was told by somebody. Like, they have no use for that at the doctor's office. And I'd been answering that question my, you know, entire adolescent and adult life, and did not know that it wasn't medically relevant. And so I think there's a lot of information insurance companies want to have. I don't know enough about the insurance companies to know why, but data is useful and data is valuable. And especially in their current data economy, it behooves them to know more than to know less.
I was today years old when I learned that, Amy. So.
Okay, we got another message coming. Okay. By the way, this this part of the talk is also being separately recorded, and it will record the chat. So.
I love this like new paradigm of meetings we're all in, where it's like if someone is typing, everyone's just like sitting there with popcorn.
It's like this really weird thing where now people can write a Google document together and you can watch somebody edit your work. If anybody has ever watched somebody edit their work, there's just so much anxiety that goes into that of like, are they about to delete something I wrote? And what is wrong with that sentence? And that's like watching the chat, I feel kind of some of that same anxiety
come up. Yeah, Amy knows, Scott knows too, I think. In my past life, I was a reporter and I like, you know, so newsrooms have that capacity, you know, that capacity all the time. And I never watched anybody edit. I was like, just, I'm going to go get a cup of coffee and not have it tracked by a loyalty program. And
at Starbucks.
Ooh.
This does not surprise me that this particular person in the chat just said that they mess with people by copying and pasting when it to make it look like they're typing.
I see. Okay, so value in that data in terms of determining pregnancy, but I think if you're pretty sure you're not pregnant, less value.
Yeah. Or there can always just be the, is there any reason to think that you're pregnant question? Like
right.
that this level of abstraction, like let me get more information to determine information that I need, but I get more along with that. That's like people who ask for your birthday to determine if you're 21, really all they need to know, are you 21 or are you 18? But then they get your birthday along with that, and that's providing more information for a smaller purpose.
Right.
Very identifying information.
Yeah. Oh, credit cards versus cash. I mean, so let's see. I will say EFF just signed on to a letter asking to pass the Payment Choice Act, which is a federal law or bill asking that we preserve the ability to pay with cash. I think, you know, as with so many privacy things, there is a lot of... there are a lot of trade-offs and a lot of things that people have to kind of weigh for themselves when it comes to, you know, how they want to use different products, how they want to pay. But we always want to have the option, right? So I think cash is privacy preserving in a lot of ways. I think it also is important to keep accepting cash in terms of, you know, people who are unbanked or underbanked. And so certainly in the context of the pandemic, we have seen a greater push to have businesses move to not accepting cash. And we're pretty troubled by that. I think cash serves an important function in society. And so, data collection is part of it, and access is another part of it. So I'm pro cash.
And just to bring this back around to the topic at hand, if you're trying to use cash to be privacy protective and you scan your loyalty card because what you're buying is on sale, you have defeated the purpose. So just be aware of the fact that you might not be able to get sale prices if you're trying to protect your privacy.
In a private privacy tax.
Yeah, because I've bought cash about four times since March. Okay, I think we probably ought to wrap it up at this point. I've got some final thoughts, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I think... Oh, sorry, I'm getting a little bit of garble. Okay, using someone else's loyalty card. Yeah, there you go, just throw someone else's card on the bus. No, don't do that. I think we made pretty clear in the panel, you know, when it comes to getting paid for your data or the similar but not identical system of getting a discount for your data, being charged less for sharing your data. You know, I understand why it is appealing, but it's really something that we want to fight. I think it sets the wrong idea, the wrong kind of frame for the way that we should be thinking about privacy and the way that we can think about changing the system that we're in right now. And so I just really encourage people, you know, as this comes up, you know, think about it for yourselves. And again, think about how it affects people who are not like you.
Yeah, I would just... Plus... Scott, don't you go on mute? I can hear myself back at me.
Okay, hang on.
Like, I just want to plus one what Haley said. And at like, if you work in privacy, you hear all the time, I have nothing to hide. Or, you know, I'm not scared of this. Or I don't mind this information. And so to kind of tack on to Haley's point, to just never, privacy is not something you can think of as an I. It has to be a we or a everybody when you're talking about protecting it. And some of the laws right now are increasingly leaning toward recognizing household or community privacy. And I think that that is the only way we're going to be able to preserve the ideals that privacy is built around preserving. And when you hear about a specific proposal and your first instinct is, I'm okay with this, to do what Haley recommends and to look at how it might impact other people, because I think she's totally 100% unquestionably right.
Okay, I just want to say thanks to you too. Thanks for everybody in the audience for participating, and I think we'll go ahead and wrap it up here. And enjoy the rest of DragonCon Goes Virtual. We'll be back with the next talk at 5:00. I'll go ahead and put the schedule in the chat so you can get the rest of the day and the rest of the weekend. And thanks to everyone. And be saying goodbye.
Thanks, Scott. Good to see you, Haley. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks again.